From APM, this is the Dinner Party Download, your audio culture atlas. Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's meet our guest of honor.
All right, and this week it's director Danny Boyle. Back in 1994, he and screenwriter John Hodge made the hit indie thriller Shallow Grave, then followed it up with a high-energy adaptation of the Irvin Welsh novel Trainspotting. It made a star out of Ewan McGregor and became one of the cultural milestones of the 90s.
Boyle went on to helm hits like the Oscar-winning Slumdog Millionaire. He also directed the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games in London. But his latest project is a Trainspotting sequel. It finds the main characters struggling with middle age and their pasts as thieving heroin addicts. Before we got to that, I asked Boyle about making the first film and whether he had any inkling it would have such an impact.
You can't predict something's going to touch the zeitgeist or whatever it is they say, whatever the expression is. You kind of make it because you have an obsession with an idea. And with that one, it was presenting these voices from who are normally marginalized, drug addicts from the fringe kind of sinker states around Edinburgh, that were on the outskirts of Edinburgh, were regarded as being at best victims, at worst evil, and all stupid, you know, to get involved with this drug and to let their lives decay in the way they did. But actually the book celebrates their energy, which is doomed in certain respects, but is also transcendent in other respects, you know, and we wanted to capture that. And, you know, people loved it in a way that you could never have anticipated.
Do you remember a moment back then when you realized the film was becoming a phenomenon?
I remember it opening in, because they were so nervous about it, because there was quite a lot of flack attached to it early on. Those moral forces condemned it as being a film that was going to recommend drugs and encourage drug use, et cetera, et cetera. And they hadn't seen the film, of course. But so I think they were very nervous releasing it. But I remember when it was released in a few screens in Scotland and in London. And I remember this journalist, she was called Muriel Gray, a young Scottish journalist with a very forthright style. She wrote this argument for the film in the face of these people who were condemning it. And I remember thinking, that's interesting, because that she represents quite a lot of people. A lot of people will see the film in the way that we intended it, as she did, you know?
These movies, actually, speaking of her, they're very specifically and fiercely Scottish, from the setting of it to the dialects, to the humor, to the attitude. Did anyone ever question back in the day, like, what is an Englishman doing helming this film?
Oh, I see. Well, like me, yeah, no, I'm nervous about my honorary Scots status. And that's a good, you have to be nervous and constantly aware that you are living on borrowed time in Scotland. They don't suffer fools gladly. And they haven't really got much time for the English, actually. But we'd already made a film in Scotland because the first film, Shallow Grave, was set there. So I think I'd sort of earned my spurs that I was kind of respectful to Scottish culture. And indeed, hey, listen, I come from Manchester, which is an industrial city in the north of England. And the Scots' tolerance evaporates as they head further south. So I was lucky I came from the north, so it was a bit easier for me, I think. And also we had, I mean, the other person who was trusted actually was Johnny Lee Miller, who was the only non-Scot in the cast. And that's an amazing achievement by him, to sit in amongst these amazing Scottish actors, you know. And he did it by method acting, you know, so he would never drop the accent when he was having a drink at a bar or, you know, ordering food. He would always have the accent, so much so that when Kelly MacDonald, who was a newcomer to movie making and to acting generally, when we had the party on wrap, when we finished the film, Johnny stepped out of his accent for the first time. But she was shocked. She didn't know he was not. And she thought she was quite upset, actually. She thought she'd been lied to, you know, and she'd been deceived. And of course, it was his method.
You cast an Englishman?
You know, she didn't really know anything about the method acting. And he's an Englishman. He's from London, yeah.
All right. Well, fast forward now 20 years. And you've had a huge success making movies, many different genres and settings. I bet with effort you could get almost any kind of movie made that you would want. Why return so many years later to these characters?
We tried for the wrong reasons, I think, 10 years ago. Irvin Welsh had published a novel sequel to Trainspotting called Porno. And we tried to adapt that, and we did adapt it, and it wasn't very good. And I think we kind of knew it wasn't very good for the right reasons, which is that if you're going to return to these characters who are held in real affection by people, you've got to have a really good reason to do so. as good a reason to do so as to make the first film when nobody wanted us to make it. And of course, we didn't have a good reason 10 years ago. It was just a kind of rehash of the original.
It was just to have fun and because the book existed?
Yeah, very simply, yes, absolutely. But after 20 years, it was very, very different. You know, it's not trying to just relive the glories of the first film. It's only doing that because the characters are, like so many men, locked into the 20s as being their ideal time to be alive and trying to replicate that constantly, refusing to admit they're living in the past, but actually behaving as though they are, which gives the film a lot of its fun. But that is exhausting. They are 46 and in a lot of trouble, really, in terms of what are they going to do with their lives.
Well, let's talk about this, actually. So it is about these aging men. They harbor a lot of sadness and resentment about the past, feeling that they've misused their lives. But I have to say that actually just about everyone involved in these two films in real life seems to be the opposite kind of person. You and your screenwriter, the actors, all went on to hugely productive careers, seemingly adventurous lives. What do you relate to in this story?
The same existential horror lies in all our paths, really. I think it's only superficial, the things you're describing. They don't really mask the true horrors that lie underneath. And I think that was the key for us all, that no matter what you think you've achieved, there are absences and losses and disappointment that are part of you. And part of growing is obviously learning to acknowledge them and in some cases to atone for them.
If I may, though, is there something in your past that you related to in a similar way, something that you regretted or maybe a project you didn't get done?
Not projects, no, because that's kind of the problem is you end up doing your projects and it's the other things that suffer, really. So I've got three kids who are great. They're all grown up now. How much of a part I played in their upbringing? You know, I did a lot of projects, you know, and I missed I miss my mother's death because I was working and, you know, it was when John Hodge, the screenwriter, and I were prepared to admit to stuff like that, that we began to come up with something that felt like it gave us a real belief and vision in a film that wouldn't just be a rehash of the original, that would put to use these characters for something that had some purpose.
So what you've been up to for 20 years?
I've been in Amsterdam.
Nice.
All right.
What else? You've married?
Aye.
Nice. Kids?
Two.
Boys or girls?
One of each.
Me, Mark, eh? But he's a chip off the old block.
James, actually. And Laura. How about you?
I have a son. He's in London with his poor mother.
See him?
Pretty regular. Currently once every 10 years.
And it is interesting that people who see the film, they are part of the film and its conversation, because the 20 year, you know, what that represents, that 20 years, is significant for everyone. People talk to you about the, you know, when they saw the first movie and who they were dating. And,
absolutely. You know, when I heard about the 20th anniversary of Trainspotting, when it was going to be re-released for its 20th anniversary, I remember putting on social media, these four words make me feel older than any other four words. Trainspotting 20th anniversary release.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy. We were just talking about it. When we made the film, there was no such thing as the internet. You go, what? It's nuts, but there wasn't, you know, and it returns actors who you've, especially if you love the first film and you've frozen in time, you have an image of Renton, say, coming out of that toilet, or you lock in. It's a kind of, it's like a picture from your family album of your favorite movies. It's like, boom, I know that picture. I love that bit. I'll talk to mates about it. And you can, as a filmmaker, you have the power, and it's a big responsibility, of course, and you can unlock that time and say, no, this is what he looks like now. It's not another part. It's the same guy playing the same character.
I actually, in the New York Times, Ewan McGregor said, and there's a quote, I'm looking forward to doing the third one when we're all in our 60s, which made me think of Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise trilogy, which is similarly following the same characters at different stages of life, using the same actors as they actually age. And I can't think of this being done in the past in film. Do you think, is our culture or maybe film culture or filmmakers more obsessed with aging now? Or maybe a better way of putting it is obsessed with the loss of youthfulness?
Well, I think we should investigate it, because our society has become more and more obsessed with denying age. And we kind of like have a youth-obsessed culture that's just frightening. rather than, say, a quality of life obsessed culture, you know. So it's, so maybe that's why filmmakers kind of dare to breach the unbreachable, the unspeakable, you know, which is that these actors who are, you imagine as being... I mean, I felt it when Bill Paxton died the other day. I just could not believe that. It was just like... But that's what... I mean, we measure out our time, really, and because it's more measured out for us.
All right, we have a question we ask all our guests, and that is, tell us something that we don't know.
Tell you something that you don't know?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
About anything. It can be about yourself, a piece of trivia, maybe something that we don't know about, you know, putting on the Olympics.
No, the Olympics thing was... It was extraordinary because I'd never really done the live event on that scale. And there were a couple of dress rehearsals when they had 80,000 people in the stadium. And I'd walk round and there'd be ambulance crews underneath the stadium. And I went and talked to them. And they said, in the spirit of Trainspotting 2, I'll mention it. They said, yeah, statistically, there'll be a heart attack tonight. So while your show is going on, someone will have a heart attack. And I was like, what?
In the stadium?
In the stadium. They said it might not happen, but statistically, that's why we're here. So that was a weird thing. And it's really important to see shadow. You know, especially an event like that, which is full of celebration, and it was a big triumphant evening for everybody, and everybody was like, rah, rah, rah. And it's good to always remember that there's a shadow there, and people have to look after the shadow, you know?
Filmmaker Danny Boyle. His new film is T2 Trainspotting. It's in theaters right now.
And we couldn't fit our whole interview with Danny into this episode, but you'll hear some outtakes on a forthcoming episode of our special podcast-only series, Speakeasy.
That's right.
Make sure you don't miss it. Subscribe to the Dinner Party Download on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.